Sí. Hey, you guys. Everyone here all right just yet?
Hey, Alan.
How's it
We can hear you
going?
great.
Good, good. Hey, we got Drew here too today.
Hello.
Yeah, things are great.
Okay, now everyone's unmuted. And I saw Kirsten on just a moment ago too. I think she's going to pop back on for a real quick intro and probably got everyone else coming in the next minute or two. I think we're all going to be here. We got recordings and we'll have things covered either way. Me check with Kirsten and see. Oh, she's coming back on. Hey, Lauren. Still getting in. There we go. And Kirsten's back with us
There she
too.
is.
Hey, I got in as me. I had to go to an incognito window. It kept making me you again. It
That's
was something
funny.
in my system.
Good.
How's everyone doing today?
Very
Doing
good.
great.
Good.
So it looks like Heather and Amatma should be coming in a second or two. I'll give like just a minute and we'll kick off and get it off to them if they do come in a bit late. Okay, I'm chomping at the bit to get going. Do you think, Kirsten? Did the minute come and go?
Yeah, let's go. It's
Let's do it.
4:01. Yes.
Yeah.
Want me to go ahead and start?
Sure, please.
Okay. So did everyone should have received the email with information about the hotel. Go ahead and book. If you need to stay the extra night on the 14th because of flights, please let me know. They'll honor the rate for the extra night, but it's not tied to the booking link in the booking page. I have to submit that for you. So just send me an email and I will get your the night of the 14th extended for you. So that way you can stay that night at that same rate. I also will be sending you an email probably tomorrow. We have a driver, the company's Driver X, and you can make arrangements with them to pick you up at the airport. That way you won't have to take a Lyft. It's a decent car, and the prices will only be $20 for you to get from the hotel to the airport, and then $40 for round trip. So I will send that information over for you to go ahead and book that if you'd like to use that service. Homework, some of you have turned in, some have not. So for you, those of you that have not, you know who you are. So please get that turned in as soon as possible. And other than that is all that I have right now. The Facebook group is up. Please make sure that you go there and ask questions if you have any questions, if you need forms, anything, requests like that, go ahead and use the Facebook group for those type of requests as well. And Dr. C, I'll turn it over to you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kirsten.
You're welcome.
So here we are, and big picture, hang on to your hats. We're going to hit the ground running. So this is a bonus call because we're officially starting with the live event. So in terms of the economics and payment schedule, that's kicking off mid-November, but this is a bonus just to get things started. And I'll weave this into the curriculum in future timing. But yeah, just really here to get everyone towards their goals. I've talked to all of you individually, and I'm just really jazzed about the things you're wanting to do in terms of just freeing up personal time and other things to practice, other directions, whatever it is. It's all cool. I want to make sure it's completely happening for you, maybe even sooner than you thought possible. So I want to do a quick orientation about some ideas about getting input and getting coaching. You know, I've got many dear friends who are at all levels of businesses, and you know, I talk to them, and I have formal coaches both ways as well. And it's kind of an odd thing that I thought is helpful. No one's ever explained this to me, but when you get really good input, it doesn't really feel the way you might think. So I don't know. I had an expectation that hearing something from a coach that was helpful and important would almost be like a solution to a math problem. You know, it was almost be like, here was this crazy technical thing that I never would have thought of and never would have come across, and here was an answer. But you know, 99% of the time, when I get input from someone, what happens inside my head was like, well, I knew that. but then the next thought is, well, shoot, I wasn't doing that. That's really dumb. And I'll often kick myself for a moment. I don't know if any of you all know or follow Allie Brown, but she's been a mentor of mine for many years back, dear personal friend. And I was just chatting with her yesterday, just socially, and she mentioned a comment for me, just some input. And that's the cycle that I went through in my head. I'm like, oh my God, that's so obvious, but I didn't really see that, and I'm not really doing that. And so what happens too is that it's so easy for us to see what's happening for someone else, and it's so different to see our own circumstances. You know, the friend that I'm speaking to, I talked with today, he's guiding many 7-8-figure businesses. He's a mentor and a coach to many of them, and he wants to talk through some branding and messaging for one of his businesses. And this is what he helps others with. And he said quite humbly, you know what, it's so hard to see these things yourself, and just want to help me talk through some of this. And that really went along with this earlier thought that I had, is that we can't see our own things that easily. And it's so common that things are valuable and necessary and are helpful next steps may end up seeming like something that, you know, was too obvious. And if it wasn't, it probably wouldn't have been the best advice. You know, think about, like, with patients, it's so common that they're asking about, you know, how do they manage their methylation, and they're not sleeping at night. You know, so the same sort of thoughts can be had. It's so easier to see outside of ourselves than it is inside of ourselves. But yeah, so with that perspective, I'm really jazzed to get things going, and I really want to hit the ground running. So I want to talk about some topics today that are pertinent to having your growth ready to happen. And I want to mention some points that would have come up from the last homework and delve into that to create a schedule for this coming year for you all. And I also want to put out a few more pieces of homework to prepare for the live event. And they're going to be things, one of them is a piece that you can use every day in your practice, be hugely valuable. Another one's going to be something that I think is just a life-changing exercise to go through. And along the lines about not seeing things as clearly yourself, we're going to gather some insights from others around us that'll be important and critical. So the theme I wanted to talk about is really now team development, because this idea about growth and freedom and leverage, it has to come from a team. You know, think about every big endeavor that's ever happened. There's not that much that can occur from someone solo. So it takes really cloning yourself and cloning your mission and your why and uploading that into others that possess this wet computer that we possess, uploading that same software. And part of it is having them inspired and motivated, but a huge part of it is just really the team dynamics. You know, there's the sense about the shared mission, which we'll talk about, but a lot of it is just how the team is interacting in general and how the team does anything. And when there's great rapport, camaraderie, you know, shared sense of I've got your back, then really then any projects seem to fall into place. So I want to talk first about phases of team development, and then about this idea about having a real meeting rhythm within the team. And you're at different places. Everyone has some facet of a team, but you're at different places in this. So I also want to talk about how the typical steps will be of this unfolding. Have enough team to where your time can be greatly leveraged as much as you would like. So there's like steps of development you would go through in the practice growth. And step zero is you're the cook and the dishwasher and the busser and everything else. And has everyone had that experience in practice? Everyone start out in that model? I'm seeing most heads going up and down. And okay. Yeah, I sure did. And I probably got about a year into that and was so overwhelmed and so distraught. But the growth phases end up being more roles taken on by different people, to where at the early stages, each person is taking on more and more roles. So the basic cycle is just diffusion of responsibility and delegation and moving deeper into everyone's real unique gifts. And that's the concept, is that we've all got our particular abilities and we want to build a team around us that complements ours. Most of you here will learn more about these things in detail, but likely you're going to be quite entrepreneurial and have higher quick start tendencies. And if you have 10 of you all in the same organization, what would happen is that you could have some great brainstorming sessions and get some incredible visions and ideas, and then come Monday morning, try to act on some new things and be completely frazzled and just repeat that cycle over and over again and never really make any progress. So it takes a team with distinct skills, but also distinct modes of operating and distinct thought processes. So step zero is pretty much just the self. And the next few steps are going to be always building upon the prior. So the first one, there's someone who's coming in who's really going to be a big multitasker, and their main thing is going to be front office type duties. They probably could also do some ordering type work. They could do some basic management, some other callback things, also just checking people out, maybe some basic MA duties, but you've got one person who's a multitasker. Now, the next step past this, the second person you're adding in, I would encourage that to be, if you've not already, have that medical scribe. Because once you're at the place to where your own time is really getting to be the limiting factor, then you need to start raising your efficiency. And I've touched on this briefly. I'll talk more in detail about this and implementing it. But it's the single piece, the single title that can leverage your time more than almost any other. So in some fashion, some of you all work remotely. Others of you are physically, most of you are physically one-on-one with your patients. But in some fashion, you're communicating with them, and then you're documenting this, and then implementing all these things that transpired. And just the simple math of that, if your day is getting to where now you're seeing close to as many as you can free up easily several slots, several patient visit slots, just by taking away that part of documenting and implementing. And in most cases, when your schedule's filled, that scribe can do that as you're in a room with someone else, because they're actually not working constantly. And they won't take down what you're saying verbatim. They're taking down key action steps to be acted on in terms of laboratory orders, changes in supplements, changes in medications, follow-up steps, referrals, whatever else. And they've often got a fair amount of time in which they're not as actively on that task. So what can happen ideally is that when you leave a room or leave a digital encounter with your patient, by the time you're finished, all the things that have been said have been documented and implemented for that patient, but also for your own purposes. So all the orders are in place, laboratory orders, referrals, the prescriptions, whatever else, it's all taken care of. And your time becomes so much more leveraged at that point. And if you think about just the hourly rate that you'll end up paying for a scribe versus what just a couple more visits in the course of the day can mean for you, it's just an obvious immediate return on investment. So I would argue that would be one of your best first steps past the initial person who's front office. So you've got the scribe in place. And based on the model, and if this is your first add-in after the first front office person, that scribe could also do some basic medical assistant type duties in terms of rooming patients or doing some basic vitals or whatnot. That would be a simple way to multitask them. I'm going to take a little time when we're finished and cover some questions in detail, but if there are some things that come up as we're going, feel free to jump on in. I'm taking a look. Does this have a hand raising type device? Not that I see. Throw something in chat if anything comes up along the way, and I'll take a peek at that. And if I can just break stride and jump on that, then I certainly will. So yeah, the next step I'd talk about would be really having that scribe in place. Past that, the next distinction is relevant based on what all you are doing for procedures that don't require your time. And if you can, if you've got the capacity per your licensure to have procedures happening from someone other than you, that's ideal. So a lot of this now is really nurses. Here's a question that came in. You mean you record the entire visit and the scribe goes through that, I assume. So one could do it that way, Lauren, but the scribe, yeah, thank you. I didn't clarify that. I have the scribe physically in the room with me. And the best candidates are ones to where they really become invisible. They're just there with the computer, they're documenting, and they're really not obtrusive. And it's not, there are formal training systems for medical scribes. It's not that difficult to find the right person for that role, however. It's really a matter of them interfacing with your record system and learning your record system as much as anything. And then having some talks with them about just them being not active participants in any facets of the conversation, just getting in the room and disappearing. So I physically do have them in the room with me. And many practitioners will have an assistant of sorts there already, especially during exams or procedures. If you've not before, it's really not the barrier you might think. And in fact, quite the opposite. What the patient's experience has been universally is that once or twice I've had someone say, yeah, I just want to talk to you. And that was so rare. But 99.99% of the time, after someone's first visit when the scribe was there, they were so thankful about how much more focus they got. Because quite literally, the whole time of the encounter, I was right there with them and just 100% laser focused on and listening and receiving and responding to everything. And I was never distracted by, you know, documenting or making notes. So without a scribe, you know, one of two things happens. Either you are pulling away from your rapport quite a bit to interface with your medical system, whatever that is. Or after the encounter, you're taking a lot of time to make notes and document and all these things. And, you know, you're not going to get it that well because it's after the fact. And the best of us are going to lose a lot of data points. That was what I would always try to do pre-scribe, was quickly between visits, sit down and make all the notes and all the action steps. And just inevitably, I'd be in the next visit and I'd get, you know, a knock from the assistant, hey, there wasn't an order for this, or what about that? And like, oh shoot, yeah, I'm sorry, I meant to get that in. So that's the conundrum. But with the scribe, your interaction is so much more present and meaningful. And honestly, I think we all know that that's a huge part of the equation of the patient's experience and their recovery, is just your attention and your unbridled focus. So yeah, I just can't overemphasize how many have raved about that experience when they're getting all their details taken care of and they're getting just all my pure focused attention. So past that scribe, the next thing would be freeing up more back office duties. And if there are procedures that are done without you, that is ideal. If you're not in a situation to where there are any procedures done without your presence, consider if they are options, because those can be huge, powerful leverages of your time. This can be things like injectable nutrients, you know, IV, IM. For those that are doing more aesthetic treatments, there's a lot of options that way. There are other versions of, as well, of things that other practitioners can do or provide, such as acupuncture or body work. But always think about how you can leverage your time and still have the patient getting that experience. This can also be other providers completely, as far as nutritionists who are giving them more detailed input. And ideally, it's all under your guises and control and auspices, and also all under the same super bill, where it's not them paying other people in different ways. Ideally, it's going to be packaged. But the more you can leverage your time by other providers, that's phenomenal. And if a back office person can do that, that's the best, because that's not a lot of training, and that's not needing to replicate yourself just yet. You know, or if there are blood tests, functional labs that they can do, that's great. So I would think about that as being the next step up past the basic office person and the scribe. Once we get past that point, your options are going to be looking at probably a manager or the first other provider. Those are the next situations you're going to fill up. And typically the manager first off, and this might even be the front office person. This might be a little more training for them, or more things they're watching and less things you're watching. But quickly after then, now it's a matter of really taking your clinical data and putting that into good systems. And we're going to come to that more in the next quarter, but that's the structure for the next few providers. I'm just going to give a brief outline of the next few steps. A couple of you are already past these steps. Many of you are not. But past that, typically your next step is expanding the front office, getting another person for the main gatekeeper for access to the public. And a thought, too, is that this one, and some of you who are just doing virtual things, this doesn't have to be anyone who's in physical proximity. So even with a physical clinic, we have offsite people who have the main lines for the phone. So it's very easy to have networked phone systems that someone who's on a Wi-Fi service can be on your same phone system. They can still transfer calls back and forth from the office, but they're not physically there. And that's a good benefit in terms of just freeing up the physical space from the office and just making it also to where it's a better experience. You know, the ringing phones, being distracted by the phones constantly, that takes away from the front office's ability to identify the needs of those who are there and care for them and, you know, check out and manage the flow of the office. So the more that task can eventually be focused on and delegated, that's an easy one to move offsite. And then past that, we're really talking about adding in more providers. Now, for some of you, you're close to a place to where we're looking at seven people in this whole crew. Let me just jump on this chat here. The name of that Wi-Fi phone service, I can provide that, and I'm going to give myself, let me get a document open right here in my browser, so I'll keep notes on some things that I will keep tabs of. There's a lot of virtual telephony is a term where your phone is actually over Wi-Fi, and they're often lower cost than multiple line phone systems anyway, and they work just as well nowadays. But with them, it's easy to have that offsite. I'm happy to get that data for you all. Okay, so action steps for me. Get Wi-Fi phone system. Done deal. Okay. And I see the need of Scribe. Seriously, the Scribe is like such a total transition. And even those of you who are doing solely virtual things, I've had some friends that have adopted that recommendation. Actually, Isabella Wentz has been very public about embracing that and enjoying it. She does do some virtual consults. She doesn't have a physical location. But I think it was a few years ago I walked her through getting set up with a Scribe. And she would have the Scribe on a group visit, much like we're on right now, and playing that same role. And in a virtual setting, it's even more easy to have the Scribe be anonymous. They can just be not physically seen. And you obviously tell the person that they're there and what their purpose is, but it's very easy to have them disappear behind the scenes, so to speak, in a setting like that. Okay, so something happens around seven people, and it's almost like a rule cast in stone that one person can manage and interface directly with about seven people. Once you move past that, now we're talking about having to have departments, because it's just in terms of personality, logistics, whatever else, you can't communicate with more than that effectively on a regular enough basis. So that first magic seven, that can be an easy point without a lot of levels. But then past that, there's a phenomenon called the gap that takes place, in which businesses can do really well up to 7, 10 people, maybe a few more. But and then they can also do really well when they've got really big numbers, like say 40, 50, 60. But between those levels, that's really tricky sizes. That's really hard to have teams. So then it takes having categories made and really well documented for who's managing what. I'm seeing a note here. We crashed at 13 people. Totally. There's a really good book called Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. And he talked in detail about this exact phenomenon. I'm going to plug that into the chat really quick. So in terms of business size, yeah, that's between, that big gap is between somewhere around like a dozen at the upper limit and then somewhere around like the high 40s. In terms of business revenue, that same thing shows up in revenue, and it's often between about 3 to 5 million or 2.5 to 5 million, to where that's a gap that's hard to cross. If you're on the other side of it for annual gross revenue, it's not as difficult, but coming up to it, you're facing that issue of scale. So yeah, relevant to some. Next big step, let me just pause for a moment and let some of that sink in and see if there's any more questions that come up about the idea of just having the people, having a number of people initially. Looks like we're reasonably copacetic. And yeah, I'm going to have a lot of time with you all on one-on-one calls, and we'll be active in the Facebook. So classically, the best questions come up like after the fact. So just make notes of them and we'll cover them. We'll make sense of it. And no worries about that. I always think about the best things to say like the day later. What do we got? Ideas for finding the right people. Yeah, so good general topic. We're going to go into that one in great detail. You know, your best general leads are going to be your patient base, believe it or not, and then also just direct contacts with anyone on the existing team. There's been quite a bit of data about that, and people that have their friends that they work with, there were a lot of contexts in which we thought that was a negative situation. But the culture has really shifted, and it's really, a lot of this is driven by the millennials. And so many of those we think about for our team, most are millennials more and more nowadays. And they are culturally different than Gen X and baby boomers, and this is one of the ways of that. So the more you can have direct contacts and reaching out to the patient base, the other phenomenal thing is that, you know, who better than someone who's already a super fan to be involved in some way? That model has worked well in my practice and many others that I've been aware of. And if you have some communication systems with your patients that's formal or not, you can just reach out to them and make them aware of that. We'll talk more about the power of your newsletter with your audience and connecting with them on a regular basis. But yeah, any way to reach out to them and say, hey, look, we're growing. This is a great thing. And you can have a conversation with each person briefly on their way out. The same way you can have one on occasion about soliciting referrals when it's appropriate, when someone's got a testimonial, they're raving about something. So yeah, just checking someone out and they're finishing up or you're finishing their visit and say, hey, look, you know, we're getting busy. It's been a great thing. We're due for some more help. And I don't know if, and this might be someone that you think could be a good fit, but you can easily not even word it towards them just to make it more less pressure. Just say, hey, I don't know if you would know of anyone who may be interested in participating. You know, we've enjoyed having you here. You kind of know what things are like. If you have friends that might have skills in these areas or want a career with a lot of growth potential, love to talk to them. So a very easy thing to have a natural relationship with some happy patients. There's windows of time after spontaneous testimonials in which you're much, much more able to have positive influence. And sadly, it does wane. No matter how much you hit it out of the park for them, you know, their focus goes elsewhere over the course of the coming weeks. So like right when they're in the moment of being pleased about a big shift, that's a powerful time for connection and useful ethical leverage, so to speak. So yeah. And that's been our best source. We've used every advertising medium you can think of. Honestly, the one that most seem to use these days is just Craigslist in our area, that or jobs.com. But there's a huge range of candidates you'll find from all of those, and some are very good, and you know, some mixed as well. The other idea is also taking on medical residents or medical interns. If you're just getting going, the thing about adding staff is that it's always a financial pucker factor. It's like, oh geez, you know, you don't want to, but you've always got to have space to take on more new patients. You got to have room for that. And so when you're somewhere around 80% capacity, you're already tapped. You know, past that point, your efficiency starts to go down and your level of service starts to compromise. So you've always got to have a little bit of room so you're not just stretched and tapped. People can get in, people can get the care that they need. And it's always a decision that's in the moment is a struggle. And then after the fact, it's almost always, boy, I should have done this sooner. But the general idea is, you know, hire very slowly and let go of someone quickly if it's not right, if you see that they're just not a culture fit. And that's the biggest factor too. We're going to get into defining your culture and defining what it is that you stand for and your values are. And that's the main way to make those decisions. Getting some good feedback here. Indeed.com, great resource. Yeah, good feedback on that. So yeah, team growth, always one of the most critical steps, and always have to have a little bit of space on the bus. So once you've got the team that's appropriate for where you are now, it's then always about being ready to scout for that next position a little sooner than you need to, because you want to hire slowly. So you want to be in a place to where you can take, you know, weeks, months to get that right person and be fussy about that. So yeah, hire before you need to, because that way you're never going to be in a crunch. The last thing you want is just like need to fill a spot like right away. So when we've got the team, the next most important part about establishing the culture is having a meeting with them. You know, it's having a cycle of connection, because you can do great work together and be in that functional state, but without ever any time to talk about the process and talk about what's going on and even just patients and their distinct needs. Without that, everything just goes down to a lowest common denominator so quickly. You know, if one of the books that I'm a huge fan of, and there's a short list of books that I read every year over and over again, and I always find things that I've not found before, things that I've not incorporated as well as I could right now. And one of those is The 7 Habits of highly
affected people. And he talks about one of the habits, I don't know which number it is, but the idea of sharpening the saw. And there's, you know, production and production capacity. We want to focus on production. You know, we've got this physical space. We've got our time available for people. If we're doing digital visits, that's our commodity. We've got this team together. We want to maximize the production we can achieve with these tools, of course. And it's always hard to think about production capacity because that's time that you're just compromising. You know, you're going to get a clearer sense about what your hourly time is worth. We're learning about that. We'll learn about the clinical hourly income as well. And every slot, every time that you're not there doing production, it's a total loss of revenue. And that's apparent. But I would argue that without pulling that time away, you'll always be at just a plateau of the lowest level of competence. The weakest link in the chain of the whole system is where the high point of your growth ends up being. So dedicating time away and compromising production is one of the most surefire ways to radically raise production. And with this rhythm, there's a couple cycles. I'm going to talk about annual, quarterly, weekly, and also daily cycles to think about. Now, if your team is small, if the team is just you and one other person, that's fine. There's ways you can still model these things that'll make sense. If the team is not all physical presence, same thing, there's ways you can model that and shift it. Whenever you can communicate and meet in person, it's so much more powerful. You know, we all know that a lot of our communication is nonverbal and real subtle auditory cues or whatnot. So yeah, there's just no more effective ways than getting people together in a room with a shared problem to see big solutions emerge. So the first cycle is annual, and you can do that any time of year. The thoughts about when you would do it, you know, obviously New Year is appealing as far as the idea of planning and goal setting, but also consider the seasonal ebbs and flows of your practice. Like, for example, we're here in the Southwest, and in the summertime, there's fewer people here. So we're still booked every day, but in the summer, we're not booked out as far. There's like not as much of a waiting list or pent-up demand in the summertime. So we've done our larger annual retreats or gatherings then. But think about when it makes sense in terms of just your clinic flow and time off for people. And this is something that you would ideally also do off-site. So we'll talk about meetings that are on-site and those that are off-site. This annual one ideally would be off-site. And I'm assuming there's not a deeply articulated mission or culture just yet, but a lot of this culture will be driven from you and from your core values. So think about location in terms of ways that resonate with you and your beliefs, your core values. You know, my team, we usually camp. we go out in the wilderness, in the middle of nowhere, and use that for our retreats. And over the years, we've had some people to where that freaked them out. And over time, it became apparent they weren't the tightest fits for our culture. Or some came to love it, and they ended up being better fits. But no, think about the location, the venue, as being a function of some of your core values and what really matters to you. And the purpose of this annual one is going to be a couple different ones. So the first one, what you want to do is this will be the time to really draft shared mission and values. And to have everyone on board and have this be meaningful, you want to be able to be guiding the discussion and really imbuing a lot of your values into this, but everyone needs to have some real sense of ownership and autonomy with the product from this. So everyone in the team has to have participation and input, and I'll talk you all through that process in detail at a separate time. But right now, I'd encourage you all to think through some dates and get some dates calendared for these events. So this one really off-site. So after you've moved through this first year, there's more than just the drafting of the real mission and values. But the first one, the big focus is going to be just having fun, you know, just some social time, some real connections, some sharing of your mission. You know, some of the things you wrote out in your why exercise would be wonderful things to articulate to your team at this. This is really establishing that, you know, you're a leader, that there's a clear shared mission, a clear shared purpose, and you want to be able to do what you're doing more effectively and in greater ways. And the purpose of this is so we can all do that. And it's also to show them that you recognize not just their value, but their primacy. They're just so critical. So our team, for example, we know that the idea about the customer always being right, we don't believe that. So the team honestly is a slightly higher priority. And once a blue moon, there have been people who have been, you know, not nice to the team members in ways that are apparent. And that's not acceptable. And all of our team knows that they are all deputized to fire any person at any point in time. Doesn't matter if that person, they think it's one of my friends from college or whatever else. No, they know that if someone uses inappropriate language or is rude to them, that they can do that. So the team's got to know that you realize their role and that your culture with them as being an essential step towards everyone's growth. So team building activities, reward, setting about goals and rewards. We'll talk more about this too, but each quarter and each year, it's great to have various goals and targets and then rewards that everyone decides upon that are tied to those targets. And it's funny, it's not always they have to be huge, huge things. It's more a matter of just the fact that you're paying attention and you're seeing things that are important to them. I just had a question. Can they fire patients? They can fire patients for you. Is there a protocol for how to do this so you're covered? You know what? Let me throw that on my to-dos to get you guys all that too. Protocol for dismissal. Yeah, that'll be in the SOPs, but I'll make sure we get that right away. And yes, they are. And honestly, what's happened is that in almost all cases, they will still, when it's someone that I do, that I've known for quite a while, they'll often just ask. I'll say, hey, you know, so-and-so said this to so-and-so, and here's what happened. And I said, well, what do you think? You know, what's your reaction? And they say, I don't think they really belong in our culture. I said, all right, so do it then. That's fine. And I support them on that. And you know, it's a numbers game, but you guys are doctors. I think I've heard stats that roughly 1% of the population is sociopathic. And I think that in 20 years and probably, 80, 90-some-odd thousand patient visits, we've had, I think I can count on two hands the number of times that someone has been a major level jerk and, you know, just been completely rude or completely inappropriate. And so it's not a common thing. We've been really blessed, but it happens. And another classic part of that too is that, you know, it may be someone who's so kind and respectful to the doctor, but they get out at the front office and they're like, you know, Mr. Hyde and Dr. Jackal or however that works, vice versa, like completely different to someone they perceive of authority and someone else they think they can help. And that's not okay. So yes, Lauren, the team can. And by and large, they know that it's not even necessary to ask when people cross certain thresholds that just not a good fit. And the times where someone does do that, they're only going to cause more problems down the road. They're not going to be a good fit anyway. So you're never losing anything. And it just maintains the culture so much better. So I look at the dismissal protocol. So that's the annual. And the first thing now is think about doing that. Think about calendaring that. And the main purpose is going to be drafting out some shared mission and values, which we'll work more on how to draft, how to refine afterwards. But this is the core thing that builds the team and really, really fosters it. Now, the next part of the cycle is going to be a quarterly retreat. And this one, when the team is below that number of seven, this is really going to be everyone. When you're well above that seven, this may end up being department heads. And it's okay, it works out either way. But the quarterly one, this is something I coined. This is the ditch, dive, and deepen. So the quarterly retreat, the annual one, you can do in as little as a day. You can get that done in a day. If you've got time and it makes sense, you could certainly make a couple days or a weekend. Ideally, this would be taking place during normal clinic operations. And that's a stress too. You're taking time away from you don't normally be there, but you're respecting everyone and their social life, and their work-life balance. Now the quarterly, this can be several hours, you know, 3 hours, or this can be a full day if you're talking about a larger enterprise. This one can be on-site, not as much of a problem, but same thing, you would have no other clinical care taking place during that time. So the theme of the quarterly is the ditch, dive, and deepen. I'll explain that. And the method is that everyone on the team has to come in with at least three of each of those. So ditch, dive, and deepen. So there's some things that you're doing that it's time to let go of. That they're not serving you. And maybe that's, you know, for a while some of our doctors did PAPs. And there's a lot of women's health that we do, and it was great. But really, more and more patients were just doing very brief visits. There were, the processing was going through insurance. It was time we could have spent focusing on things that really just we do. So we're getting tighter and tighter on our niche and our specialty. So that's something that we ditched many years ago. So it's always seeing what are the things that are not serving us. And maybe the ditch is a person who's toxic, a toxic patient, or maybe it's a certain supplements that we're just not using anymore. They're sitting around gathering dust. And the important part about this is everyone creates this list independently. Now, group dynamics, if you take a group of 3 people, 10 people, and you all ask them for some input, what's going to happen is there's going to be a dominant person who arises and just says a lot of stuff. And it may be useful, but most everyone else will agree. And that's all you're going to hear. Whereas if people can work independently, they've actually done studies on this, on like how accurate groups are. And if groups can independently answer a question that has a verifiable answer, then groups do better than individuals, like across the board. So like think about like archery. If the group was all not seeing everyone else, they're all shooting at the same target, you're going to see everyone converging upon the center of that. Or you could say like how heavy is a cow? You can ask 1,000 people how heavy a cow is. And some have no clue, but there's going to be a convergence around a real accurate answer. Now, in that same situation, if you ask these people together, it's just going to be the loudmouth that speaks up. You don't really hear, you don't get a convergence. You don't really get any synergy that takes place. So they have to independently each craft their ditch, dive, and deepen. So dive is something that is not yet occurring. This is something new. And maybe this is a new functional lab test. Maybe this is a new type of service to offer. Or maybe this is a new position that needs to be brought on board. So this is something new we're going to dive into. And then the deepen is something we're already doing, and that we should do this better. We should do this more thoroughly. And all facets of the care, the whole care process boils down to people presenting with symptoms and then you providing solutions, which are some combination of diet, lifestyle, supplements, medications, procedures, tests. So it's always about just symptoms and solutions, just a chain between the two of those. And you can break those out into how you're bringing people in, you know, what you're doing for marketing, how you're connecting with them, what their experience is of the practice. And then on the opposite side of that, on your side of that, how it is that you are responding to them and assisting them. So always think about these things in terms of ditch, dive, deepen. Big concept, I'm going to draw a little bit more on that, but let me catch my breath and see if I can clarify that for anyone. And how are we doing on pace? I want to just give you guys everything. I also want it to be actionable and not be too much and too overwhelming. We doing good? I see some thumbs ups. Alrighty. So the ditch, dive, deepen, this is the quarterly. And the quarterly, with that, what you want to generate is a 30, 60, 90 list. There's always things along the way in the practice that you're going to be improving upon. And yourself and the team is going to help you find this. And again, if this is just you or you and another person, you can do this exact same process, no problems. But every quarter, you'll establish a 30, 60, 90. And the 30 is going to be half a dozen, maybe 10 items. And these are things you can do within 30 days. They're not super involved. They're not going to take more than half an hour of someone's time. They're not particularly complicated. You can polish them off rather easily. And 60, 90, just greater levels of depth and detail, and 60 days and 90 days. So the 60, you want 2 or 3 of those. And the 90, you want just a couple of those, you know, one or two of those, one big goal for the quarter. So the purpose of the quarterly is to ditch, dive, and deepen. And from those ditch, dive, deepens, filter everything down into a 30, 60, 90. So you can think about having a great brainstorming session where everyone presents their various ditch, dive, deepens. We put them all up on a big dry erase board. And then we go through that. And some of them we ditch. You know, some of them just, after everyone thinks about it, are not really important, are not priorities. Some we'll save for future quarters. But what else is there that's really worth acting on will then convert into that 30, 60, 90. And some things will be natural overlap. Some things will be synergy to where one of the steps will take care of another. But you really just prioritize those in terms of, do we need to just do this now? How long will this take? Is this worth offsetting other ideas? So the purpose of the quarterly is generating that 30, 60, 90. Now, the next cycle that we want to have going is the weekly cycle. This one makes a lot of sense to have it on-site. And seriously, like an hour is often plenty. If you are doing some special training for new procedures or new outreach methods or whatnot, you may want to tag on time onto this regular weekly visit. And that may not be forever. It may be for a month or two. Or you could bring in someone who is training on communication skills or customer service or whatever. So you can also do special events during this cycle. But the big purpose of this weekly is just open communication and then taking a look at what's on this 30-60-90 cycle and making sure that you're moving forward on the 30-60-90s. So part of it can be more open-ended discussion time, but the real theme of it is moving on these projects of growth. And the last thing is going to be the daily cycle. And I'm going to give all of you all a tracking sheet, a sample tracking sheet. So each morning we do about a 5-minute huddle in the clinic. And the team all comes together. We've got the daily numbers. We're looking at yesterday's numbers. And we've got a monthly target. So each day we're seeing where we are relative to that monthly target. And we know what we want to achieve for that day and how that all breaks out. And we'll learn more details about how to use this tracking sheet. But for starters, I'm going to give you all this at the end of it. And I'd like you just to take a peek at that and modify it. It's an editable Excel spreadsheet that you can modify and adapt for your own purposes. So, helpful thing to get going with. Schedule meetings, annual, quarterly, weekly, daily, input questions, clarification points. Is this helpful stuff? Is this useful? Okay. So I'm going to share the screen and move on to the next part of this. And this is going to be some simple math. Those of you all who have completed the hourly schedule, I want you to take a peek at what you projected for yourself for your clinical care hours for 2018. And in this context, I want to think about your current weekly. So I see everyone taking notes. Just grab a pencil and just make a note on what your current weekly clinical care hours are, like how many hours are you with patients per week, and include paperwork, admin time, whatever else, whatever it's all involved directly for patient care, just put that number down. And then once you've got that, then I'd also like you to write down, this is your magic wand, you can put whatever number you want, but what do you want that number to be when we're wrapping up next year? That's gonna come fast, so like, December 18, if I ask you that same question, how would you ideally answer that question of how many hours per week you spend on clinical care? This is fun, huh? Okay, I'm going to get this document up here and open this up, share the screen. Okay. There it goes. Share screen, desktop. It won't let me share a portion of that. Oh, I see. So it's on. Yes, it will. Ha. You all now should see a screen that says 2018 schedule planning. Everyone's got that? Okay. So we've got those two numbers. How many hours do you want for patient care for 2018? I plugged in some examples on this just to make this math straightforward. So in this scenario, the numbers I plugged in were say someone's doing 45 hours per week right now in clinical care, and that by the end of next year, the goal is to be at 30. Very realistic, I think very doable, but I'll use this for this exercise. So the first step is just divide the next year's by this year. We're going to turn this into a percentage, basically, what percentage change that we're making. So like 30 divided by 45, you know, 0.6. Everyone good with that step? It's fun stuff, Tom. What's your target for end of the next year, Tom? I can't hear you.
Oh, I said zero.
Zero, cool. So in that case, that's going to be easy. The next slide, the percent is going to be 100. So we're going to subtract 1 minus whatever you got. So in your case, we're going to end up, final answer is 100. I'll tell you that right now. It's simple. So 1 minus whatever the fraction you got from the last one. And we're going to take that divided by 4. So in this case, Tom's going to be 100%. And minus divided by 4 is going to be 25%. And converting the tenth here, this 0.1, into a percentage. So we're taking how much percent change we want in this time frame and making it into percent and dividing that percent by 4. And what this is going to be, we're going to now convert this into how many hours we're going to want to shift each coming quarter for 2018. So right now, in my scenario, if this was like 45 hours per week, 10% of that, 4.5 hours. So during quarter 1, 2018, that's the change to the schedule. And think about this. It'll be some weird number that might not make sense in terms of an actual day. But think about like a full day or like a fraction of a day. Like your day is often like the morning half and the afternoon half. So go by chunks on that. You can take down like one shift, like morning shift or afternoon shift or a full day, whatever most reasonable part is to make that work. Now, in scheduling these reductions, these blocks, like this one's going to be like 4.5 hours every quarter. So the idea is that it will just take commitment and it will take, this is also a bit of a pucker factor to change the schedule. But the first step or two, I'm going to make sure that we're all moving forward in a responsible rate and that your systems are ready for this, and that eventually when it's down far enough that you'll have the needed teams to help carry on. But the first few steps you're taking, even without changes to the infrastructure, what's going to amaze you is that you'll lose no momentum. Just by tightening up your schedule, that itself will engender greater efficiency. Things like the scribe coming in, things like thinking about the systems. But it's so easy to take any process and with a little thought, have it run so much smoother and so much more efficiently. So this is the plan for the coming year, is just how quickly you want to see that shift happen, is how quickly we want to start stepping down. And because this practice is something that has been developed for all of you by many years and it's got a lot of momentum, it's something we want to do in a very controlled, incremental, logical way. And we'll talk more about those of you who are shooting for zero. I think probably about 2 or 3 of you are, and then several others are wanting to be set a reduced schedule. But those who are shooting for zero, there's more conversation points you're going to have as we're getting closer to zero with our patient base. And that's fine. It's something we want to articulate and make sense to them. So the next part about this is going to be building. I'm going to leave the screen share up for a moment just so I can have this come up. There's a few pieces of homework I'm going to recommend prior to our live meeting. And one of those will be having an org chart in place. Also towards the idea of really identifying and establishing the team and being clear for them as well. Who's who and who's doing what. Here's a couple of examples. These are ones that are, this one's a couple years old. This is our clinic org chart at the time. And I'm going to give you guys a link on just some easy tools. You can do this in Microsoft Word. I really like Lucid Chart. Makes me nuts. You got to pay monthly for it. They've got great ways to drag and drop and do incredibly intricate and beautiful flowcharts. So in our case, you can see that there was really one central person, our main coordinator, who was the hub of most everything. I was here at the time. So basically, I would interact with one of our advisors, our bookkeeper, and the manager. And that was I would certainly knew and talk to everyone else, but those are the, my main contact points. And she was overseeing then the front office director, who had actually a few more people under her. She was overseeing the medical assistant director, who had a couple people under her, and then also the back office director, and then the medical director, who had the doctors, and then our product supervisor. So these things are great for everyone to know exactly who goes to whom for what and how it all fits together. And especially when you get to more sense of scale, that's important. Here's another model of doing that. You can also do that more so for position opposed to person. So here was one I did a couple years ago for the online business. Let me expand this a little bit so it's visible. So you can have these in terms of, I love the idea of having the audience, like in this case, the audience, the patient base, be at the real top of the chart, because that's what it's all about. You've got someone who's guiding it, who's, like in this case, this is the content, me as the content producer, integrator, someone who's leading the sales and marketing, director of operations, finance, and various people underneath that. But you can do it where it's more clear about roles and you plug in individuals, or where it's more clear about individuals and the roles are more given. But having this somewhere, even if it's just a few people or just like two people, it's so huge to have it just delegated in writing who does what. You know, I've had so many ways in which I could have moved faster than I did just for lack of transparent communication. You know, I've often made the mistake that this loud noise in my head, it's so clear to me that everyone else must hear the same things that I'm hearing. And I learn more and more that it's not true. I can think something is so obvious and, you know, that I thought I said it or I thought I shared it. Nope, it wasn't spoken. It wasn't shared. So the more you can be just completely clear and articulate. You know, I love the word explicit. I wish it didn't have dirty connotations, but explicit, like clear, obvious, apparent, out in the open. So that's a beautiful thing about an org chart, is you can know who's doing what and who's handling what. And these can be made much more granular as far as task cycles as well. So I'm going to share this along. This is how to make it in Word, how you can do it. Lucid charts, pretty easy either way, but very helpful tool to have, and good thing to have for that first annual retreat for yourself and the team. So now here's the next exercise. We're going to get more clear in this first quarter about your niche, your area of focus. Some of you already have that very clearly spelled out. Others of you are evolving into it. That's critical. Even deeper than that is getting a sense about what are your unique talents. You know, Dan Sullivan coined the phrase unique abilities as a good way of saying it. And to be congruent with our earlier theme, this is something we cannot always see that accurately for ourselves. In fact, we probably won't. And you might even be getting some clear ideas from this that help you become more clear on your clinical niche, even though it's not the purpose of this. So here's the exercise. And Tim Ferriss, everyone's probably heard of him. What he has argued is that one of the strongest ways you can build your capacity and raise your abilities is to be comfortable in socially uncomfortable situations. So he's done a lot of challenges for himself in his early years where he would go and just ask random people for change or do these things that are socially awkward as a sense of getting over that sense of social awkwardness. So in this one, take half a dozen, 10 people, and people that you really respect. You respect their opinion, and they've got a good sense of who you are. They've seen you in a variety of environments. They've seen you perform, and they've got a good idea about what are the skills that you have. And I would really encourage to draw from a diverse range of types of people, you know, some social friends, some family. If there's a couple of long-standing patients that you come very close with, they could be good options that way. People you've worked with professionally. So choose half a dozen, maybe 10, and send this letter off to them. Obviously, completely edit this and make it more sense for your voice, but you're going to ask them to help clarify you and your unique talents. So just email this kind of a template to them and put a date on that. It's something that if it's a vague, open-ended request, as sometimes these things are, there's no time, there's no sense of urgency, and nothing will ever happen. So put a date and just know that you may need to follow up. If someone's eager and they say, yes, I'd love to help, don't be surprised if you got a follow-up once or twice. Totally par for the course. Everyone's busy, overloaded, but at the same time, it'll be a helpful thing for them as well, just to articulate what value you've been in their life. And yeah, you're not, like I said, you're not fishing for compliments. You just want some clear sense about what your unique capacities are. And you don't really want to lead it too much. You want it to be somewhat open-ended. So I would, again, I'm completely welcome to make it a voice, but I would caution you from giving too many stipulations or too much detail. You want this to be more open-ended for them. But the power of seeing these, going through these, is just phenomenal. This is data that you probably would not really get clarity on in any other setting. And just so, so life-changing. I'm going to forward that along and also include some instructions in that. Any input or questions about this one, about your getting clear on what your big focus is? I'm seeing something come up. Here we go. Before the retreat? Yeah, definitely before the retreat. Thank you, Greg. And I did, in the draft, you'll see, I encourage you to give them a deadline where you've got plenty of time for that, and a bit of leeway before it as well. But yeah, that would be helpful. And it'll take someone all of a few minutes to sit down and think it through and, you know, see the email and ponder on it for a few days and write it down. So it's not a burden, but it'll create a deeper bond with someone and be very helpful. Okay, so one more thing I'm just going to show you all for a piece of, nothing you've got to act on right away, but something you can start incorporating, we'll talk a lot more about how to utilize it, is this daily progress report. Very powerful tool. Here we go. Yeah, this is the one that this is the master sheet, and this is the one that we'll actually go off of. We'll use different tabs on this for tracking the days. We'll often have like a fun quote that we'll change out every month. So we'll establish a monthly goal. I'll give you guys a quick overview. The monthly goal is a typical month with a reasonable stretch. So maybe 5%. And then there's rewards that you're offering the team for meeting the goal. And that's just meeting it in general, like right here. And then another reward if you meet it early, like say you meet the goal by the 20th. Because then whatever happens the rest of the month, that's just bonus. And then you're just doing really well. You're ahead of schedule. And I shouldn't have used the word stretch, because this is, the goal is a slight stretch, and you've got a stretch goal. So the first goal, maybe it's 5% above the same month last year, you know, year to date could be an example. So it's quite plausible. And you want to make it to where they're set up to win, to where they can pretty realistically win this. It's not too daunting. But then there's a stretch goal, which would be kind of surprising. Like, wow, maybe that's 10% or 15%. And it's not all that probable, but not inconceivable. And so they've got the capacity to earn 3 different tiers of winnings on this. And there may be, in terms of your practices, you can track this in terms of your daily revenues, maybe number of consultations, new revenue per consultation, various procedures, new patient seen or scheduled, you know, subtypes of procedures. And another fun thing too is, from your 30, 60, 90, you can put elements of it down on here just to tally and keep aware of. And these can evolve over time, because some things, maybe they're just happening all the time and you don't even need to think about them anymore, and you can pull them off of this. The things that you do have to be more aware of, you can keep on here and make sure that they are happening real well. So that's the daily progress report. And one of the most powerful tools that I couldn't even imagine how the growth could have gone without just seeing where it was. You know, it's what you can measure, you can manage, what you've got to measure. And a question too is that, do you want the team to be aware of this? And I would argue, again, with evolving workplace culture that we are in, you do. And they don't need to know your income per se, but they can know what is happening with the big picture finances of the clinic. You wouldn't really need all team members to be aware of other staff's income or total expenses. But if they're aware of just gross revenues and they're seeing how this progresses over time, they can feel a sense of winning. They can feel a sense of accomplishment from that. I'm going to turn off the screen share here. Okay. And make sure I covered the key points. Yes. Okay. So we went through a lot of ground today. Hope I didn't explode anyone's heads, but we talked about some preparations for the live event, that exercise using the hours from the homework about just, you know, your descent schedule, so to speak, for the coming year. Building the team, you know, the steps of building a team. You know, who do you have? Who might your best next steps be? And these would be points we can go crazy deep into on everyone's individual spotlight time too. So no worries about that. And then also defining that cycle of meetings with the team. Today's Wednesday. Day after tomorrow, I've got my third VIP day with patients, which I'm opening up. And I'll tell you guys a bit about that at the event too. And I would really encourage you all to model that as one good way to stay connected with some patients if you wish to, or if nothing else, to have another revenue model. Hugely efficient for time, and it's of big value for the audience. I'm going back to the chat here. Can it be busy? You know, and I did say this is our big priority right now. This is the big focus, and it's so worth it. I mean, I think about all the time that I spun my wheels on projects that either I never even finished them, or I did and they weren't all that important. And I can't think of any more worthwhile project than getting your time freed up and leveraged. So that's what this is all about. And yes, we're moving fast, but you guys, this is our lives, this is our time, and it's worth having more of it. So I appreciate that. What other points can I clarify from tonight? Totally here for y'all. Okay. Looks like we made some good sense of that. I'm going to get busy and make sure that you all get all these things you saw. Something came up here. Before November 13th. So the things we should do, the mentor email request. Yeah. You'll have the form, and just take the form, and you know, I wouldn't do a BCC, just send it out individually, but send it out to the key people, and that'll take you, boy, shouldn't take you more than 15 minutes to send that out. So just send it out. And then I would even make a little tiny table of, you know, maybe 3 days later, you know, who responded, who sent it back in, and then just stay on top of people. Because it'll take that, even if you're closest friends. So, yeah, I don't see that taking more than 15 minutes to launch it, and then maybe another 15 minutes to track the whole process. So that one won't be too tough. The daily tracking sheet, again, nothing really to do with that in detail. The org chart, I mean, seriously, grab a crayon and some construction paper. It can be that simple too. But that's an invaluable thing to have at your availability. And other homework, just the reduction schedule. So that's homework we did in class, so to speak, right? That one's already taken care of. So nothing too much extra. A lot of new things to talk about. But yeah, moving right along. And someone else coming in. What does an org chart look like? Only a couple members on the team? Oh, just that. So in cases like that where there's fewer people, then you may think about it more in terms of just the value of being clear task delineation. The more people you have, the more apparent it may seem to be in terms of who's doing what, just based on title. You know, someone's title may really define what they're doing. But the fewer number there are, the more hats everyone's wearing. And that's just the nature of it. So that can be a very valuable tool for just delineating who's doing what. And I'm not going to, there's one more chart I'm going to show you guys as an example. Open this up, share the screen again. So like in my online business, this is a way that I've tracked how we make content. And this is a huge chart with a lot of moving pieces. So don't let it freak you out. But with a small number of people, you can do stuff like this to know very clearly, not just the org chart, but who's doing what. Okay, share the screen, resume share. You should see a screen that's got a whole lot of boxes and colors. So this is, I'm going to make this a little bit smaller. So this is how we make our content. with my online business. And basically we know how all these steps work, you know, who's getting what where, you know, where the videos get edited, where things get posted. And this could have been an early mock-up of an org chart, but this was a real process chart. So the fewer people there are, the more you think about an org chart covering a lot of process as opposed to just people. Okay, maybe just the basics. How many people minimum do we need on the team? How many rooms, doctors, et cetera? So Amatma, we got the recording. If you did come in later, I went through a step cycle. And I'm going to give you guys my notes too that I had, so you've got that all spelled out, just in terms of a recommended cycle of how many people you've got and what are your best next hires and best next add-ins. So yeah, straightforward. In terms of your time to free up, think about roughly a quarter to a third of your time per provider. So if your goal is to have your time come down by a third, maybe one other provider that's just rocked out could help you achieve that. Those who are shooting for 100%, that might be three or four providers or more. But yeah, very, very straightforward thing in terms of that long-term target. Okay.
Hey, Alan, in terms of our sessions with you, how yes. should we space that out over time? Do you have a thought about that?
Yeah, you know, set aside the large hour one just at your earliest convenience. I have no objection to doing it sooner, but there may be a lot of things that happen at the live event that would be answered then for you. So you'd probably get better use of that one after the live event, just really maximizing it. So I would do that soon afterwards. And then also the other ones, really just have them somewhat spread out throughout the time. Yeah. The live event's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited about the whole thing. We're going to have a great time. And I'm just really jazzed about everyone here and about their potential, how much growth we're all going to see, and how many more lives we're going to touch and impact because of this. And we're going to have a great time along the way as well. So, yeah. All right. I think we covered that. Unless anything else comes up right now, I will let everyone get back to their evenings, and we'll get all the notes sent out, we'll get these recordings taken care of for you all, and we'll see you soon at the live event, and then next time we'll be active on the Facebook and always there.
Thank you.
All right, cheers. Have a good night.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye.
Good night.